A familiar face is back at ICAS. NASA continues to assess heat shield damage to Endeavour. And Midwest says no to AirTran, but yes to another suitor. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, August 14th, 2007. John Cudahy is back as president of the International Council of Air Shows. He served in the post from 1997 to 2006, but has spent the past year as executive director of the American Medical Student Association, based in Reston, Virginia. Cudahy returns to replace Bruce Wilson, who served ICAS as president since April of 2006. Cudahy has been involved in organizational and managerial roles for nearly 25 years. ICAS board chairman Jim Pites praised his qualifications. Quote, ICAS, already a powerful voice and strong advocate for airshow professionals, will benefit tremendously from John's leadership experience, enthusiasm, and vision. We're glad to have him back, unquote. In his response, Cudahy observed that the current industry environment is challenging. Quote, I'm eager to tackle both the challenges that our industry faces and the opportunities that we have to improve this wonderful business. It's great to be back, unquote. Spacewalkers Dave Williams and Rick Mastracchio removed a faulty attitude control device on the International Space Station Monday during their second spacewalk in 3 days, but have not yet assessed launch damage to the shuttle's heat shield tiles. Scans of the orbiter's underside Sunday show a 3.5-inch long gouge in two adjoining thermal tiles near Endeavour's right main gear door. Some of the damage penetrates the tile's 1-inch thickness right down to the orbiter's aluminum skin, meaning a spacewalk to attempt repair might be necessary. NASA says astronauts have trained extensively for such a repair in the wake of the 2003 re-entry loss of Columbia. John Shannon, chair of NASA's mission management team, told the Associated Press the shuttle Discovery suffered even more damage in the same location during a 1998 mission and landed safely. Engineers are now conducting computer-based thermal analyses to determine if repairs will be necessary. Shannon says we should know by sometime Tuesday. AirTran's attempt at a hostile takeover of Midwest Airlines has ended in a surprise, at least to casual observers. After claiming for 2 years that Midwest could be most profitable as a standalone, the company's board rebuffed what AirTran called its best and final offer of $15.75 per share, only to announce it's accepting a higher bid. TPG Capital LP has offered to acquire all outstanding shares of Midwest for $16 per share. Northwest Airlines is thought to be a passive investor in TPG, making the move to preserve a marketing relationship signed earlier this year. TPG says its offer will allow Midwest to preserve its autonomy to, quote, permit the company to continue its rich legacy as a leading provider of customer-oriented quality air service, unquote. In a response to Reuters, AirTran suggests the Midwest-TPG merger will, quote, surely raise antitrust concerns, casting doubt for shareholders on whether a transaction can in fact close, unquote. Midwest and TPG say they expect to execute a definitive merger agreement no later than Wednesday. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that airline passengers lose their rights to object to a search after they pass through initial screenings. The San Francisco-based court cited terrorism concerns when it ruled in a case involving a Hawaiian man who tried to back out of such a search in February of 2003. The San Jose Mercury News reports that Daniel Kualoa Akai went through a metal detector, then told screeners he no longer wanted to board a flight when it came time for a more thorough search. Screeners went out and searched him anyway and found crystal methamphetamine. Akai was later sentenced to just under 6 years in prison. In the court's 15-page decision against allowing passengers to back out once they've started screening, Judge Carlos Bay wrote, quote, such a rule would afford terrorists multiple opportunities to attempt to penetrate airport security by electing not to fly on the cusp of detection until a vulnerable portal is found. This rule would also allow terrorists a low-cost method of detecting systemic vulnerabilities in airport security, knowledge that could be extremely valuable in planning future attacks, unquote. Up next on ANN, Russia embarks on a Cold War nostalgia tour. Vladimir Putin wants to ramp up his country's civilian aviation industry. And the U.S. military approves alternative fuels for use in the B-52. You're listening to Aero News.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 400 is a fire-breathing turbocharged four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises 235 knots with a next-generation Avidyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. As high as flight level 250, way above most weather, and a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 400 is the kind of plane you deserve, whether you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144. Check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com. Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 14th, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. In a bit of Cold War deja vu, Russian Tupolev Tu-95 bombers have returned to the skies over the Pacific and Arctic, and their Russian crews are exchanging greetings with NATO pilots. Canada's National Post reports a resurgence in flights of the turboprop aircraft, known by the NATO codename Bear. A Tu-95 overflew the U.S. Navy base on Guam last week, with other recent Bear sightings in British airspace over the North Sea. Since the end of the Soviet Union, the Bears have typically flown missions limited to lumbering near the edge of U.S. and Canadian airspace, testing the radar and fighter responses of the North American air defense. Analysts say that Russia has placed renewed resources into its military, including its fleet of nuclear-capable bombers, and is apparently eager to throw its weight around once again. Speaking of the 13-hour mission to Guam, Major General Pavel Andrusov, chief of long-range aviation in the Russian Air Force, said the Tu-95 crew exchanged smiles with U.S. pilots, just as crews did during the Cold War. Quote, "We revived this tradition. I think the result was good. We met our colleagues, fighter jet pilots from aircraft carriers. We exchanged smiles and returned home," unquote. As ANN reported, a bear came within 15 miles of the Alaskan coast last October, a situation that no doubt led to even more smiles being exchanged. John Thompson, president of the Toronto-based McKinsey Institute, is an analyst who believes the flights are repeating a mistake made by the old Soviet Union, which collapsed in part by overextending beyond its resources. Quote, "The Russians have a bit of money and a lot of attitude, and they're making the same mistake. They're spending more on their military and trying to act like a superpower, but they can't afford it. It's posturing," unquote. It's not just Russia's military aviation profile, which appears to be ramping up. Russia Today reports President Vladimir Putin hopes to revive the country's machine industry, which fell into neglect following the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991. To accomplish that, Putin is looking to create national engine and helicopter building corporations, similar to the country's United Aircraft Building Corporation, which was incorporated last year and which is now hard at work on the Superjet 100 regional airliner. Quote, "Our engines are behind in terms of resources, fuel efficiency, noise level, and environmental standards. They're blocking the development of Russia's aviation industry. Today, I have ordered the creation of the United Engine Building Corporation to address this," unquote. Putin spoke during a visit to Russian engine maker Klimov. Putin has set a 5-year time frame to compete against General Electric and Rolls-Royce. Putin also announced plans for Russia's rotorcraft industry. Quote, "Helicopters are absolutely crucial for Russia, considering its geographic and climatic conditions. I have ordered the creation of a unified helicopter research and production base to increase volumes and financial capacity," unquote. Russian analyst Dr. Maria Alexinkova warns, however, that Russia's attempt to follow the EADS model could lead to more bureaucracy, not necessarily better aircraft. Quote, "What we fear above all is a return to an unprofitable Soviet structure. These new state-owned corporations must remain flexible, market-oriented, and not overly dominated by military demands," unquote. There is one big change since the old days of the Soviet Union. You never heard Khrushchev admit they'd fallen behind. It's not often the resource-guzzling military sector shares agenda points with environmentalists, but the potential for oil supplies to be strategically interrupted has the U.S. Air Force moving decisively into alternative fuels for use in jet engines. Secretary of the Air Force Michael W. Wynn announced the completion of the Air Force's certification of Fischer-Tropsch fuel blends in the B-52H during a signing ceremony last Wednesday at Edwards Air Force Base in California. That process involves producing liquid fuels from coal, which is plentiful in the U.S. Blended FT and JP-8 fuel is now officially deemed safe for operational use in all B-52H aircraft. In a little over a year, testing has moved from approval to completion. Secretary Wynn says other alternative fuels under consideration for military use include ethanol, switchgrass, and biomass. He noted that work continues on reducing the carbon footprint of the coal liquefaction process. Randy Schlitter, CEO of RANS Aircraft, tells ANN the company's new S-19 sport plane has completed 50 hours of flight testing and is now available for demonstration flights. RANS will sponsor an open house in September, but interested pilots may schedule a demo flight sooner at the company's factory in Hayes, Kansas. Schlitter says the plane is an all-metal aircraft. That's a departure from RAND's usual tube and fabric. He says cruise speed is 110 knots, which may improve further with aerodynamic tweaks. He says the S-19 is not designed for aerobatics, but has been looped and rolled without incident and shows a pretty aggressive spin recovery capability. Schlitter says one of the design goals of the S-19 was to have adequate baggage space to carry one or two folding or knockdown bikes. Perhaps not coincidentally, RANS, which is already a respected producer of high-end bicycles, is working on a knockdown bike of its own design. Still ahead, a European motoglider earns a near sweep of a NASA small aircraft competition. U.S. Airways moves a step closer to completing its merger with America West. And Cairo Airport Security deals with real-life snakes on a plane. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, August 14, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. A slightly modified Pipistrel Virus motoglider collected the majority of $250,000 in prize money awarded this weekend by NASA in a competition aimed at bringing small aircraft to the masses. The weekend race for personal aircraft vehicles took place at Charles Schulz Sonoma County Airport in California. CNET reports that four teams competed in six categories: speed, short takeoff, efficiency, handling, noise, and best overall. The $70,000 Virus, which is built in Slovenia and was recently approved for U.S. operations by the FAA, took top honors, winning the $100,000 grand prize, as well as best short field takeoff and efficiency. Pilot Michael Coates called the Virus the Prius of airplanes. It can fly at 170 miles an hour while getting 50 miles per gallon. A Vans RV4 collected the $25,000 prize for speed and another $50,000 for being the quietest plane. A team flying a Cessna 172 collected $25,000 for best handling aircraft. No big surprise to the millions of flight students who've learned to fly in the type. As part of its Centennial Challenge program, NASA has staked $2 million for five PAV races. On Sunday, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers announced a tentative agreement with U.S. Airways covering the carrier's 7,700 fleet service workers, a significant step toward merging the workforces of U.S. Airways and America West. IAM General Vice President Robert Roach Jr. said a major issue addressed by the new contract is recovery by union members from the concessions required by U.S. Airways bankruptcy. Quote, "The negotiating committee has given the members the opportunity to vote on a contract with immediate improvements in wages, job security, and pension benefits," unquote. The tentative agreement includes substantial wage increases and calls for a single pay scale for all fleet service employees. The accord also improves the scope of work performed by IAM members and provides increased contributions to the IAM National Pension Plan. That's the only defined benefit pension plan remaining at U.S. Airways. The IAM Negotiating Committee unanimously recommended membership ratification of the four-year deal. Results are expected to be announced on September 5th. Negotiations for 2,900 mechanic and related employees, represented by IAM District 142, are continuing with the assistance of a facilitator from the National Mediation Board. Is this a case of life imitating art? Snakes on a Plane was, of course, that cinematic high watermark starring Samuel L. Jackson. But it was also the goal of a Saudi passenger attempting to board an airline flight in Cairo, Egypt recently. The Associated Press reports that after strange-looking x-ray pictures led screeners to open a 22-year-old's carry-on bags, they found a mass of live snakes, baby crocodiles, and chameleons. There was even a cobra squirming to escape. The reptiles were confiscated, but the man was allowed to board and continue his trip. Finally, we told you yesterday about the Wisconsin housewife who went out in her yard to hang laundry and found what's thought to be a piece of a Northwest DC-9 on her lawn. Why do these stories always come in groups? The Washington Post now reports that on Saturday, residents of the excitement-deprived community of Boyds, Maryland, discovered a landing gear door from United Express Flight 7350 lying on the ground in a public park. Resident Hillary Lowenstein saw it while walking her dogs and thought it was part of a UFO. But she was not frightened. Quote, "Aliens are here, and I thought, how exciting," unquote. Laura Brown of the FAA says the agency is investigating. Quote, "Airplanes are designed not to shed parts," unquote. Hillary admits it's a little disconcerting to have large pieces of metal fall near a residential area. But even though the door turned out not to be extraterrestrial, she's not disappointed. Quote, "We were very excited to find something like that in the town of Boyds, where nothing ever happens," unquote. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear the first part of Jim Campbell's conversation with Gary Beck, former chief pilot for Delta Airlines, now heading up Delta Connection Academy, about the looming pilot shortage facing the airline industry. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our Aerocasts. You'll find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.